You thought you'd gotten rid of us, didn't you? But you were wrong, old bean, because we're back with a vengeance.
God save the Queen, my son.
From studios in Hollywood, California, rural southern Indiana, and the hinterlands of North Dakota, this is the Live, Laugh, Golf Podcast. And now, here are your hosts, Desert Duffer, OTB Lefty, and Jay Score.
Folks, welcome back to the big show. Duffer here, OTP Lefty. How are you?
Doing great. Looking forward to a golf weekend. Ready to do this.
Jay Score.
Hello, hello. Doing pretty well. It's been a busy, bustling week, but glad to be talking to you too.
Not much happening here. A little, you know, Twitter, getting into some Twitter time. Love my Twitter peeps.
You do love Twitter.
Other than that, not too much happening here in LA. Headed to Santa Barbara tomorrow. What do you guys got? Anything this weekend?
Yes, I do. Headed down to Tennessee to play golf with some friends and get to go to the vaunted Sweetens Cove again. That's like 7 years in a row, I think. Just a wonderful place to play golf. Really looking forward to it. It truly does let people let their hair down and do some things. There is some truth to the environment, the setting, making good things happen.
Jay Score, plans for the weekend?
I've got a quick little overnight jaunt with the wife out of town just to get away from a hectic week. Going to play a little golf at a nice club in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis-St. Paul area in Minnesota, and going to play with tee it up with a friend. I hear it's Superintendent's Revenge, I'm looking forward to some absolutely murderous
cups. That's always
fun.
What's the forecast? What's happening up in your neck of the woods, temperature-wise?
Temperature-wise, it's morning start out in the 50s, daily highs creep up into the touch 70, 71 some days as a high right now. Wow. Wind is always bucking, but I'm told the course that I'm playing on Saturday morning is absolutely pure right now, and the greens are fiery combined with psychotic cup locations. They had to email out that there's a 5-putt maximum, so it could be devastating out there.
Okay, let's do this just quickly. You guys have participated in events like this before. I know I have. Do you really enjoy that? Like things on the edge of just silliness?
There's a novelty to it, I think, every now and again. Yeah.
I mean, it can be kind of an equalizer, right? Because when everybody's struggling on the greens, you can make up some strokes if you're just a generally lousy golfer. So I kind of like it.
When skill doesn't matter. Everybody's going to putt it 20 yards down the fairway. So just have fun.
Is anybody going to watch golf this weekend? Do we have anyone covering the golf? We got Sanderson's happening. There's a tournament over at the Old Course in St. Andrews, Scotland this weekend. Anybody? I'm not going to be watching much golf in Santa Barbara.
I hate to admit it because this is a golf podcast after all, but I've said it before. It's North Dakota. I got to play when I can play. So Sanderson Farms, I saw a little bit about that. Something about the tee markers looking kind of silly or cool, depending on how you want to describe it.
You're going to have takes. You're going to have takes on the ducks. I think they were ducks. I don't know what they are.
I would think chickens, but I don't know.
Listen, we're the hardest working men in golf podcasting, so I think we get to take a semi. We'll have something to talk about. We'll get it together. All right. Well, what are we going to talk about this week? It's Thursday, OTP. You got some – what's Rory up to? Your guy Rory.
Okay. So we highlight haters and losers on this podcast, and it's a good fun time, but – in this new golf landscape, as the ecosystem evolves and multiple factions are seeking to expand the hobby, it's interesting to me who's winning. And yes, as everything evolves, who's winning? And I just wanted to take a step back and look at the events of the last few months and try to make an assessment of that. And you mentioned Rory McIlroy. And I think that after 9 months of live golf, startup expansion, PGA Tour panic, haplessness, reaction, expansion, etc. Some defections. Okay. I'm running out of words. Running out of big words. But after all the events, I think Rory has been the most strategic, and I think he was the one who was looking ahead in all of this.
Whoa.
I can't wait.
Let me make my case. Are you ready?
All right.
Okay.
Are you ready? Okay. Some of it.
As ready as I can be for this.
Okay. Yeah. Stop me at any time. But I feel like someone on Team Rory was paying attention through the proposals that were made and the rough drafts of what these new new things were.
Leagues, formats, proposals.
Yes, exactly right. Exactly right. It's late. By not putting a proposal in front of the tour or being a part of anything that pushes that to happen kind of makes Jay Monahan look like an idiot early on, right?
Early on, in the middle, and late in the game.
Right. Okay, so just write that down. The whole time, no one in the regular media, legacy media, whatever, on television says, man, Rory McIlroy is really trashing Jay Monahan.
Is that fired? Is firejmonahan.com still up? Is there any action on firejmonahan.com?
Still haven't seen any action, but I'm
anyway. Rory with a knack for not ever really ruffling any feathers. He gets praised through every bit of this. So a large number of his rivals go to live, if you want to say rivals, people of his era. And I want to say this lightly because Rory is an old 32. So Bryson, DJ, Koepka, Reed, all these guys go to live. Rory's able to just kind of sit back and see what happens. He obviously was an offer was made to him, but he took this wait and see attitude or just sat on his thumb and did nothing. He already has guaranteed money from Nike, so he's kind of not in a hurry. He's in a financial bracket or two above his contemporaries. He sits and waits. He makes little jabs about the format, and he kind of aligns himself with the PGA Tour. The rivalries kind of in seed. You see where we're going?
He's playing both sides, so he can't lose. I mean, he did at one point he did try to get the PGL, the Premier Golf League idea before Jay Monahan and the policy board. He was on a podcast. He said, we've got to consider these options. That was when Andy Gardner, who was the figurehead leader of the Premier Golf League, was valuing this potential new league at $10 billion. They were going to share, I don't know, half of that with the PGA Tour. So he was involved. It seemed like he thought that sounded like a good idea. So it seems like he's, you know, I always say about Rory, he moves with the wind, and he's like Captain Renault in Casablanca.
You know what? No, I think it gets better, right? He has the most popular loss in British Open history. all people can talk about after Cam Smith wins.
I mean, the Vandeveld loss.
After Cam
Smith. It's definitely not the most.
I mean, he is the darling of the golfing world by not winning, as rumors circle about Cam's eventual signing with Liv. Guys, let's face it. His major championship career is over.
That's a hot take.
The media laps up this near miss, right? While all this is going on, he grabs.
I'd love to get on that train because I'm not the biggest fan of Rory. And in the past couple of years, I'd have been with you 100%. The golf that he's playing is just so good. It just feels like he might accidentally run into one in the next year or two. that's what I think.
No more majors. Ooh.
You're welcome. I'm saying no more. I would bet under one half.
Okay.
Anyway, then all the stuff happens during the playoffs, right? He grabs Tiger as an ally. However long back in the past, they had this idea for this Top Golf thing. Well, now's the time to really pull it out and lever it, right? So he basically blackmails the tour into co-opting ideas that are present in the Live Golf League in that format, gets them rammed through the leadership and into the schedule. He cuts a deal with the tour for a better deal with the tour for this Tiger Golf Live or Top Golf Live or whatever you want to call it. And he gets more money than he would have got otherwise. And so he's actually gained some of his own media rights. Now, a little bit of extra time has passed. Liv has had some wonderful.
Also, just saying, bolstering his own investments that are in his portfolio as well with the Tiger Golf Live product itself. So
yes,
you know he's winning every step of the way.
Let's not forget his investment in Troon Golf Management, which I don't know if we've talked about this, but Troon, one of Troon's properties is the course that Liv will be playing in Jeddah. Right before the Miami event in a few weeks. Nobody, Rory doesn't care where the money's coming from.
No, he never has.
People keep going to live. Best non-American player, Cam Smith, goes. Rory does all that work during the FedEx Cup. Then he wins. Like, holy Donald Trump lotto. He gets a big payday after he gets the tour to essentially just emulate live within the existing framework. So he's gotten all of that to happen. He's got Tiger kind of on an island by him not really promising to play more golf. One of the things that puzzled me the most about the BMW Championship meeting, the Tiger-Rory meeting, was that Tiger didn't say something like, okay, I'm going to play this many times. He set up this thing. So someone there has identified an opportunity for those two guys to either partner to own the tour or to, you know, have some larger partnership that reaches out into other things that's part of golf. Maybe the expansion of that pop stroke thing, the maybe potential pitch and putt franchise. There's something going on there. Eliminating Tiger as a figure for the PGA Tour as his career starts to wrap up makes Rory the most powerful man in golf right now.
Yeah, I can't argue with it. We still don't know who's pulling the strings behind the scenes, though. I'd love to know what JP McManus has been saying to both Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy. And if I'm looking for the real most powerful man in golf, I don't know if he's not it. Obviously, you've got to look over to Augusta National and the men that are running things over there. Mike Wan, a lot of people love Mike Wan. I've never been the biggest Mike Wan backer. Rory's certainly a good case. I want to talk a little bit. I want to at least mention some of the things that he said over there at St. Andrews this week in the big interview where he talked about OWGR points, talked about whether there was any opportunity for LIV and the PGA Tour to get together and talk. Here's a quote from Rory. He said, I would just say the ball is in their court. If they want to come to the table to try to play nicely within the sandbox that's already created, the opportunity is there. Now, I don't think anybody, any of the media members who were present, and I think this was kind of like an impromptu interview on the course, but it didn't seem like anybody pushed back when he said that. What does that mean, the opportunity is there? Because later in the interview, he says, well, there's two lawsuits going and it's probably not the right time. But what is the opportunity? How does he know the opportunity is there? Should we believe him? Because that's totally contrary to what Jay Monahan, who is at least officially the commissioner of the PGA Tour, has been saying, that there's no opportunity for these organizations to get together and talk. So I don't know what it is. I mean, it just seems like he says one thing, and it's not even, for a while it was he would say one thing one week and say something the next week. Now he's saying just what are seemingly totally contrary things within the very same interview. Like, it's very hard for discussions to happen right now when there's two lawsuits going on. What are you talking about? That's the perfect time to have settlement discussions.
Right. Monahan, in an interview with Mark Schlaback, gets asked the direct question, can the PGA Tour and LIV Golf coexist? And he says, I'd provide the answer that it's not in the cards. The answer to that is they've gone down their path, and I think we have been pretty consistent that we're going down ours, and I don't see that happening. Haven't, and I don't. Unless I get an email from Rory McIlroy saying that we will.
God, and I don't even know, what does that mean? He doesn't think they can coexist? Like, it's a battle to the death? One of them is going to put the other one out of business, and that's the only way this is going to end? I mean, I still don't understand how this guy has his job.
It puzzles me when everyone thought he was so incompetent. Even those folks who did not want LIV to start up, succeed, flourish, whatever.
And there's no shortage of those people,
agreed,
of course.
They all agreed that the lack of responsiveness, the lack of putting a plan in front of the players earlier, the lack of just hearing out the offers and all of that stuff, they agreed that that was a critical failure on his part. That makes sense to me. But now, all of a sudden, he's the defender of the flame. Well, because his presence benefits someone who's getting his way a lot, and it's like magic, and all of those people.
And this is your new golf Illuminati thing. It's like, you've got Rory McIlroy now. I'm gonna have to deal with both of you every week.
Yeah, the puppet master strings are going deep, Duff. They're every
golf Machiavelli. I love it. Okay. Anyway, I'm proud of him. I like strategic thinking. Somebody in his camp was three or four steps ahead, and is making it possible for him to tiptoe through all of these landmines. It is a difficult media environment. Don't we know it?
Well, you know what else helps? It helps when the entire golf media is in your pocket. I mean, yeah. There's nobody out there in golf media, whether we're talking about podcasts or print media or website media or television media, both foreign and domestic. There's nobody out there seemingly who has a critical word to say about Rory McIlroy or anything he ever says. Whenever he changes direction, it's always justified, according to every media outlet that I ever hear. So the guy can do no wrong. I don't see why he wouldn't continue to play both sides as frequently as possible.
It's working well. It's brilliant. OTP, you've convinced me. I'm going to be skeptical, though, based on is he independently riding this wave and just playing it brilliantly on both sides? Or is this a very strong play by the Illuminati or
JP McManus?
Mm-hmm.
But so the other thing is,
got to look behind JP McManus, beyond him.
What's the deal with Jay Monahan? I mean,
so I will say, in some ways, I do feel like he's in a really tough position at the same time, right? Because with just the nature of the league, right, and the number of players and the structure, and I mean, fundamentally, like, I, to be clear, I wouldn't want to take a spot, but he doesn't seem to be really rising to the occasion of the leadership this needs. But
yeah, he's in such a bad position because in almost every scenario that I can imagine, he's currently dead man walking, right? He's a lame duck commissioner. Yeah. Like, this is just him playing out the string. Player members of the policy board and the independent directors on the policy board are thinking about what's the end game with Jay Monahan. This guy's not going to be the PGA Tour commissioner 5 years from now, right? Unless there's only one way. If I'm Jay Monahan, there's only one way that I can see this working out for me. If there's any kind of compromise with LIV Golf, I'm done, right? They're going to sign that contract. They're going to make their agreement. They're going to split up time. They're going to split up territories. And then Jay, it's been great knowing you. We're moving on to the next guy. That was a bad period, right? So he does not want that. It's not in Jay Monahan's best interest to compromise. The only way he wins, as far as I can tell, is if he continues to make it us versus them, good versus evil, keeps the players on that side, and he wins, right? Like, Jay's got to pour everything he's got into Koecker and Van Nest. That's it. Guys, you need to win this case. You need to win the antitrust case. You need to win our counterclaims that we'll talk about shortly. You need to get us money. I want to be able to go into the all-player meeting and say, we've come out of this victorious. As I always told you, we were on the side of good and light and right. And look, we got an extra $20 million from the Saudis. Please enjoy it. That's the only way he comes out of it with his job. Any other way, any compromise, any settlement, he's done. They got to move on. You can't stick with this guy.
What's going on with you mentioned it. You mentioned it earlier, Duff, but what's going on with the lawsuits?
Sure, we can talk litigation. Obviously, we know there are two big lawsuits. Let's start with Patrick Reed. It's always good to start with P. Reed.
Yeah. I enjoyed getting a chance to reread some of the highlights from that original filing.
All right. So as we remember, Patrick Reed filed a defamation lawsuit against Brandel Chamblee and the Golf Channel about a month ago. He filed that case in the Southern District of Texas, and we didn't talk about it much. I'll remind you what we had to say about it at the time, about a month ago.
Everything that needs to be said about it has been said, I think. He's looking for $750 million. That's absurd. Most of the statements that he claims were libelous or slanderous were not really. Mostly their opinions or just truthful facts about things that Patrick Reed did. So I don't think this case has a lot of merit.
So it didn't have a lot of merit. And what happened with that case was absolutely nothing. It languished. We also talked about, when we talked about the case, that in the court in the Southern District of Texas, where that case was pending, as soon as the complaint was served on the defendant, discovery could have started. But as far as we can tell, based on the court filings, Larry Klayman, Patrick Reed's attorney in that case, never actually served the complaint on Brandel Chamblee or the Golf Channel, even though they're in Florida where Larry Klayman is. So nothing happened until last night, Wednesday night, September 28th. Larry Klayman withdrew the lawsuit from the Southern District of Texas, where Patrick Reed lives, and refiled a substantially similar case in the Central District of Florida. So the case is still pending, just in a different place, and we've added some defendants. Shane Bacon, come on down. You're now involved in a lawsuit with Patrick Reed. Damon Hack, you're now involved. And Iman Lynch, who I don't know how he avoided it the first time around, but he's in now too. So basically the same allegations. He added some more stuff, mostly having to do with things that have occurred since the filing of the first lawsuit. So more tweets from Brandel Chamblee about Patrick Reed taking blood money and working for murderers. I still think this case doesn't have much merit. I still think it's likely to get dismissed. One of the things we talked about when it was pending in Texas, there's a statute in Texas and one in Florida, but in Texas, you cannot file an anti-SLAPP motion, which is kind of a fast-track way to get rid of a suit like this, a defamation suit usually. There's a fast-track way to get rid of it, but in Texas, you can't use that in federal court. In Florida, however, based on the case law so far in the federal courts there, you can. So what I would expect this time around in Florida is that the defendants, all of them, will file an anti-SLAPP motion. So we should get movement on this, I say soon, but soon after the complaint is served. The complaint still hasn't been served as far as I know. A judge has yet to even be assigned in Florida. And like I said, they didn't serve it at all the last time around, almost a month in. So who knows what Klayman's up to. In short, it's another frivolous lawsuit from Patrick Reed. Not much more there.
I love him just continuing to take shots, though. Like, in some ways, I want it. I need more added. Just keep every week adding more people. It kind of like Chris Jericho from WWE. You just made the list.
Yeah. So, you know, I tried to, you know, I read through it. It's hard to read because it's so nonsensical for the most part. But there's some stuff in there. I think probably, and again, if you know, I had to deal with this on Twitter. That's why we played what I said the first time around. I have never said that Patrick Reed had a good chance or a colorable claim in this lawsuit. It was frivolous. This time around, still almost wholly frivolous. There was one thing I thought in there that maybe Patrick can get some traction from. And this is something that it's an allegation I didn't confirm because who knows if Larry Klayman's allegations are accurate. But he says that on September 13th of this year, Brandel tweeted, "By defectors, I mean those who have turned their backs on the meritocracy of professional golf. I mean those who have sold their independence to a murderous dictator and those who have sued their fellow professionals so they can benefit from the tours they are trying to ruin." Now, the elements of a defamation claim, of a slander claim, or of a libel claim, and, you know, opinions are generally exempt from these claims, and hyperbole is exempt from these claims. It's got to be a misstatement of fact that is injurious to the plaintiff. And here, closer call. It's a closer call. You can argue that saying that he sold his independence to a murderous dictator is a misstatement of fact. So one of the things that Klayman tries to pursue in this complaint is that Patrick Reed and the other golfers are working for LIV Golf, which is technically a corporation formed under the laws of, I think it's the state of Delaware, but it's not directly working for Mohammed bin Salman or even the Saudis. They're investors in the corporation. I think they own 90% of LIV Golf Investments, but it's not technically working directly for Mohammed bin Salman, and it's certainly not working directly for a murderous dictator, which, you know, could be true. That's not what we do on this show, but there's just a little more meat on the bone there. It's still not a lot of meat on the bone. Don't get me wrong. I don't like this lawsuit. It's certainly not worth $750 million. I would put it as a favorite to be dismissed. One of the things, again, a slap, the winner in Florida, from what I understand, I'm not licensed to practice in Florida. In Florida, from what I understand, the winner of a slap suit, whether it's the side that's making the motion or the side that's defending, is awarded attorney's fees. In many states, only if the moving party wins are attorney's fees awarded. So That's it. It's hard to get excited about the Patrick Lee Reed lawsuit. It's pretty ridiculous. All right. Well, so then there's the Mickelson. You heard that there. Yeah.
What'd
you hear about that?
So now Jay Monahan is also firing back, as I understand it. Is that what the other lawsuit was this week, Duff?
Yeah. So first thing that happened, I think, since the last time we spoke, is that Phil Mickelson is no longer a plaintiff in this lawsuit. Remember, the title of the lawsuit, the first plaintiff is Phil Mickelson. It's Phil Mickelson et al. v. PGA Tour. Phil Mickelson, Ian Poulter, Taylor Gooch, and Hudson Swafford all withdrew from the lawsuit this week. So the first time we had three guys withdraw, the way they did it was their name just wasn't included in the amended complaint that was filed a couple of weeks ago. Well, this week, Phil and then separately the other three players withdrew by filing in the court. So there are only three players left. Those are Bryson DeChambeau, Peter Uihlein, and Matt Jones, along with, of course, LIV Golf as the plaintiff in that case. With that done, the latest thing to happen was last night, again, Wednesday night, almost midnight, because obviously the filing was due, the PGA Tour filed its answer. So you get time, and it was agreed on in this case. You have to file either a motion to dismiss the complaint or an answer to the complaint. A motion to dismiss is exactly what it sounds like. An answer is also much what it sounds like. Each of those allegations, remember, it was some 58-page complaint or something, and each paragraph contains allegations. So an answer is formatted similarly. You go down through each paragraph, and you admit or deny the allegations in there, or you say you don't have information. So the PGA Tour filed its answer. And along with that answer, it also filed a counterclaim for tortious interference with contractual relations against LIV.
In plain English, what in the world does that mean?
Yeah, so a tort is a type of claim under the law, an injury. So you've got contract law, criminal law, and then torts. Torts are things like personal injuries or torts, negligence, and then other kinds of business torts are fraud and negligent misrepresentation. Tortious interference with contract is you had a contract with somebody, another party knew about that contract and intentionally did something to break up that contract, and then you were harmed. Each state has its own laws, minor differences in dealing with these laws. The PGA Tour is saying, hey, LIV, you knew that we had contracts with the players. You knew that they weren't allowed to play in other tournaments without getting releases from us. And you told them to come play in your tournaments despite knowing that. And you told them that they couldn't get in trouble and that they weren't breaching their contract with us by doing it. And they were. And that's improper, unlawful conduct. And you've tortiously interfered with our contracts.
Now, the injury to the contract is being felt by the tour. Is that what they're saying? Because the players obviously are doing fine with the money they're getting now. But so is the tour saying that because we basically had to ban these players because you did that and now our product is hurt?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's the tour saying, hey, so remember, we've got LIV saying, you've cost us a lot of money by violating the antitrust laws, trying to keep a monopoly, not allowing players to play where they want to. And the tour is coming back saying, first of all, no, that's not true. We haven't broken any laws, but also you have interfered with our agreements with our players. And by doing that, you've caused us financial harm. We don't have these guys, you know, they're not playing in these tournaments now. There's been harm to our reputation.
We had to add tens of millions of dollars into bonus money.
Yeah, exactly. Who knows what kind of harm they're going to allege? But, you know, it's one of these things that they can't win on this claim unless they also win on LIV's antitrust claim. So if LIV convinces a jury that, in fact, the PGA Tour is a monopoly or has attempted to create a monopoly and committed unlawful acts under the Sherman Act, well, then there is no interference with the contract because it could be any number of reasons. One, that contract was invalid because you were in violation of the law. Or two, LIV had substantial justification to interfere with that contract because it was in their economic interest. Three, there's a doctrine called unclean hands. That's what it sounds like. Basically, you were dirty. So you can't come against us because you were dirty. But at the end of the day, you're going to win. the PGA Tour is either going to win both or they're going to win neither if it gets to a jury. Now, there's some chance that LIV will file a motion to dismiss here and they could get this contract claim dismissed. I don't know. It sounds like Judge Freeman is not really enthusiastic about deciding early motions like this. I remember the last hearing before her, she was kind of like, look, if you file a motion to dismiss, don't expect the trial date to get changed and don't expect me to rule on this motion for a long time, which is kind of a wink, wink way of saying, don't waste your time. Let's litigate this case. But who knows? In any event, the LIV Golf Tour will need to file its own answer or its own motion to dismiss in response to the counterclaim. And that'll be due in 21 days unless there's some other agreement. The one other thing that I have to say about it is it felt in reading that it was less about a serious claim for damages from the PGA Tour and more about another opportunity to convince the judge that they're the good guys and LIV is the bad guys. They threw some of the things that she had said in the TRO hearing back at her several times. The LIV contracts are even more restrictive than the PGA Tour contracts. They said that several times. They used sports washing several times. They continue to say the Saudis have unlimited money. They're trying to harm competition. It's just one of these, it's kind of, I don't want to say a PR move, but it's an optics move to try to get the judge on their side.
Well, you said it earlier. The only way Jay Monahan survives this thing is by continuing to perpetrate the good guys against the bad guys in this thing. And it seems like it's going according to plan so far anyway, as long as he can string along this effort.
Yeah. Listen, I'm a lawyer and I find the whole thing depressing. You know,
you should be celebrating. Lawyers everywhere are putting cash in their pockets through this very niche sport. ridiculous. It really is ridiculous, but it's also sort of entertaining in a sick way.
Listen, everyone's favorite thing is a settlement, and we'll get there at some point, but it doesn't seem like it's going to be an early settlement. You know, these things change week to week. Well, I guess JT, we'll see what Rory has to say next week, wherever he's playing. I mean, that's where
we
are.
Is he going to ask for another sit down or something to that effect? Duff, I do have one last question. Yeah. We talked about it a couple times. Again, I'm not quite a legal expert yet, getting there with all this lawyering going on in the golf space, but discovery, what's the deal with that?
So
would juicy things ever come out through that process kind of as time goes on, or is it going to be big bang, or can you remind me what's going on there?
Discovery in that case is happening any day. I don't have the schedule in front of me, but they've agreed. So that's one other thing that happened this week. There's a little skirmish that will go before a magistrate judge, which is like not an Article 3 appointed and confirmed by Congress judge, but sort of a, I don't want to say assistant judge, but it's another judge that oftentimes will decide issues relating to discovery disputes. And in Judge Freeman's court, she is sending all of the discovery disputes to a magistrate first. And there has been a small dispute. And the one that I'm remembering is that there's an attorney for the PGA Tour. So in a case like this, you have something called a protective order. This is an agreement between the parties and then blessed and entered by the judge in the court file that says the way that you have to operate with respect to documents that are being shared between the parties, right? So LIV is giving sensitive business information to the PGA Tour and vice versa. And this document controls how it's handled, who's allowed to see it, lawyers, legal assistants, paralegals, legal secretaries, et cetera. And in some cases, it gets contentious. And in a case like this one, where LIV feels that specifically the financial details that are in those contracts are really important to its future negotiations with potential players, that it doesn't want those to get out there. So LIV is understandably being careful about who it allows to see it on the PGA Tour side. So in this protective order, it'll say, of course, that executives for the PGA Tour, like Jay Monahan's not allowed to see it unless it's put in front of him at a deposition by LIV Tour. So the attorneys, obviously, that are litigating the case on both mm-hmm. sides are going to be allowed to see these documents. Remember, the PGA Tour has two law firms working for it, Kecker and Van Nest and Skadden, if I'm remembering correctly. The PGA Tour also wants to have one additional lawyer that they're calling an outside legal consultant be able to look at these materials. And the PGA Tour is saying this is a person who's managing and monitoring the litigation, although he's not one of the attorneys on these two main teams. Well, it so happens that the firm that he does work at is Wachtell, Lipton, and Katz, which is a super elite firm in New York City. It's also the firm that PGA Tour policy board member Ed Herlihy is a partner at. So LIV Golf is understandably not super enthused about giving this guy access to materials that he could pass along to Ed Herlihy, who is running the board for the PGA Tour. So that's a skirmish that's going to be decided in the next, I would assume, week or two by the magistrate judge. So that's one thing that happens. Other than that, discovery is going to happen. They've set dates. Document production, I think, is set to begin in a week or two. And it's supposed to be complete in a month or two. Depositions are going to start soon. It's happening.
Jesse, give me one prediction of something that will come out that is absolutely not going to come out. What's an absolutely false prediction about discovery? A bombshell that doesn't go off. I crushed him, folks.
I can't think of anything. I'm not clever enough right now.
Well, what do you want to see? What do you want to see? What are you most excited to get a look into?
So,
I want the real number, of Tiger's women.
Okay, I don't think we're going to see that. Here's a better question. So let's say discovery.
That's OTP making a joke for his own question. See, you got to give me the setup line, OTP. If you've got the good joke, I can give you the alley oop and you can dunk it home.
No. I mean, that certainly was no dunk. I just I was just sitting here thinking, like, what could be like the wildest thing that could come out that would be like that obviously isn't going to come out?
Well, obviously, it would be that the Golf Illuminati exists. There's like a triangle in somebody's email signature. You know, that certainly is not coming out.
I just want to get down and dirty.
Underneath the island green at Sawgrass is a vault.
God, I just want to see spreadsheets. I want to get down and dirty into the details of the charitable contributions. I want to know the numbers having to do with the TV contract. I want to know how much CBS is paying, how much NBC is paying. I want to know all that stuff. Like, what is the stuff that you would like to see? What happens if one of these parties files a motion 4 months from now and it's half blacked out? Like, what's the thing that if it's blacked out, you're going to say, Duffer, we need you to go file a motion to unseal in this court on behalf of Live Laugh Golf. The public needs to know. What's the thing? What's the thing you need to know?
You can't wait for that moment. So what I'm excited to see is I know, like, in my guts, I know there's emails out there with Big J or Keith Pelley that are talking about sponsors potentially cooperating with LIV Golf. And I'm excited to see if there is an actual sort of smoking gun situation here about, you know, using his market power to keep people out and threaten sponsors from losing PGA Tour business if they do business with LIV Golf and different things like that. You know, there's several companies that were mentioned before. So truthfully, seeing some of those emails.
Don't you want to see all the Masters emails? Like, don't you want to see what the signature block is on Ridley's email?
Yeah. I bet it's tasteful. Yeah. I bet it's very
Do you think
subtle,
he has one of those
tasteful.
Automatic best or regards or something? How do you think he signed? I bet Ridley is one of these lowercase only guys. That's the worst.
Lowercase only, and it just says like Fred or something like that.
I think he's a respectfully yours.
No maybe way. No way. No way.
A lowercase F, maybe?
It's a velvet sledgehammer, you guys. It's a velvet sledgehammer.
All right. Litigation, that was boring as hell when they cut that.
Let's rev it up.
Let's talk about
I think OTP nearly fell asleep during that.
Let's talk about the television, the potential television contract. Did we get there? Amon Lynch. Said that it was imminent for LIV Golf to buy time on Fox Sports One, which was met with widespread derision on Twitter. And then just hours later, the LIV media people said, "That's not true at all. We're still working on deals. We've got a lot of fires in the oven." What do you think? First of all, if it's true, if it's a time buy on FS1, what do you think about that? J-Score, OTP, jump at it.
So first of all, Lynch, member of the traditional golf media, who knows what, you know, legitimacy there might be to what
that's
he has
giving,
to say
that's
here.
That's giving him a lot of credit. I mean, Lynch, he's the worst, right?
I'm being fair. I'm fair and objective, you know. I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt case by case, you know. Track record suggests I shouldn't, but I'm an eternal optimist, Duff. I truly am. Can't help it.
I mean, he's a criminal. But, I think he's a criminal against truth, justice, and the golf way. I hate that guy.
I love it. So if they're going to buy time, I'm not really surprised because golf doesn't have super great ratings to begin with.
Terrible ratings. The ratings game is coming up, folks. Stick with us.
Stay tuned. And it's a startup. Like, there are a lot of unwatched, poorly watched startup sports or smaller sports leagues that have awful television time or stream on Twitch or other things. And it's not because they're bad. It's just there's not that deep of a following for it at that point. And
yeah, and you know, for a long time, it wasn't even just really small sports or startup sports. But 15, 20 years ago, networks, both cable and broadcast networks, were going heavily into the time buys because it just works so much easier for them. They don't have to worry about dealing with advertisers. Let the buyer deal with it. And in this case, I think it makes perfect sense because, remember, LIV already has all the production stuff set up. They've been doing it for five tournaments already. They're ready to do it. All they need to do is sell ads. And I'm sure they'll hire the very best ad people, you know? So, look, the World Cup in 2002, I think, was an ad buy. We've had so many of the NHL for decades were ad buys on TV. Let's not, I just keep hearing people are calling it an infomercial. It's just, there's no objectivity out there. Other than Bob Herrig, we got to shout out Bob Herrig, who at least is, you know, fighting the good fight for, well, yeah, I can see why you would think that, but this is good. And also shout out Andy Johnson, who I just heard him, I don't know if it was today's podcast, but I listened to it today and he said, it's a good thing no matter how you slice it because it's going to be on TV. And everybody keeps saying, well, it's on YouTube, it's free, and look at how low the numbers are compared to the, well, yeah, it's free, but nobody just stumbles upon YouTube. And you stumble upon things that are on cable TV. You're flipping through the channels and, oh, what's this on FS1? I'll give this a shot. And that's good. I don't see any way that's not going to increase viewership. And what's your guess? Let's do a guess. I mean, we don't know when the first broadcast will be, but if it's this season, what are you guessing for average viewership numbers for the final round of the first televised LIV event? JT, you go first.
I have one question. Is it going to be live?
Well, let's assume it's live. We don't know. We know nothing. But if it were, what do you got for numbers? What would you predict?
A regular tour event does 2 million. I'm going to say, you know, 1.5 million.
Okay. Chase Cool.
So
there's going to be some interest for novelty. It is a new thing for a lot of people to see for the first time. They've only read about it. They've only heard disparaging things said about it. And
let's remember,
let's hope the promotion machine works in such a way that they're able to garner some viewers. And
I want to help you out a little bit here, OTP Lefty. It'll be around 2 million on network TV generally for a PGA Tour event. Okay. So that'll be 2 to 3 million. If we're on cable TV, so sometimes these lesser events get on Golf Channel for the final day, we're not doing those kind of numbers. We're never going to hit seven figures. So do you want to, I'll give you another guess since we're looking at FS1 in all likelihood.
555.
Okay. J-Score.
That's reasonable
to me.
Yeah, 555 seems a lot more reasonable. When you came out firing at 1.5, I was going to say I'm a bit more pessimistic on my estimate. I was thinking 365, 400, somewhere in that range. And then, but you know, I think that's even with the hype, to be completely honest. But again, it's a start to get on TV, because honestly, the YouTube algorithm is tough to beat. And having watched Liv, they don't fit the algorithm's preferences for people randomly getting Liv Golf live round coverage pushed to them when they go to YouTube. So getting it on TV will help the product.
So what's your number?
I'm gonna stick with my gut and say 365,000.
Yeah, like I'll go 400,000. I feel the same way. There's gonna be, and there's so much that we don't know. We don't know, of course, that it's gonna be on FS1. We don't know what the time will be. We don't know which event it'll be. There's only a couple left here. If it's in Singapore or Jeddah, that's gonna be a problem. And if it's in Miami, the final round is the team stroke play event that have we talked about that yet? I'm not super excited about that. So I think if it were, for example, the Boston final round, then we could be looking at 500,000-600,000. So much is going to be dependent upon the time and the format. So I don't know. So have we talked about that? Did we talk about that on the last podcast?
We alluded to that there'd be a bunch of match play, but I don't know if we went into the details.
So I don't have the paper in front of me, but Liv released the details this week of the Miami final team event. It's going to be 3 days instead of four, which we initially thought it was. They initially told us it was going to be match play all 4 days. Now it's only going to be 3 days. It's going to be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The top four teams will get a bye on Friday. And then on Saturday, the teams will play. And the format is going to be, as we know, there are teams of four. There'll be three matches. One alt shot or foursomes match and two singles matches for a total of 3 points. There will be no ties. If there's a tie after 18 holes, obviously we'll play on until there's a winner. The captains will play singles, and the captains will choose who the two-person foursomes teams are. And that will be head-to-head matches. Winners move on to the Elite Eight on Saturday, and then the final four on Sunday will play stroke play. One of the other interesting things about it is during the match play, the first 2 days, the higher seeds get to choose who they're going to play. So there'll be like a little mini draft, and you get to pick who you're going to play against among the other lower half eligible teams.
That's a great opportunity to give another team the middle finger. That's a very competitive thing. Like if you have a draft,
I'm the one seed and I'm taking the two seed.
You have a schoolyard pick'em, right? And you make a pick. Okay, but how about if it's a schoolyard pick'em, but you pick the other guy's team for him and it goes that way? That's an interesting, fun wrinkle. And there's a little bit of animosity that could come up before, because you're going to punk somebody. They're not going to like it.
Exciting thing about that Miami event, for the very first time, two-thirds of the Live Laugh Golf team will be together at a Live event. OTP and I will be there. We got a place. We got a little Airbnb on South Beach. We're going to eat some Peruvian food. JT's a big, you know, beachside guy, big lounge chair guy. So it's going to be hard to him away and get him to the golf.
I'm a big in the shade guy. Big shade guy. I'll be putting on the SPF 50 every hour on the hour, soaking it up.
I'm looking forward to hearing the experience, getting updates from you guys at the event. Are you going to spend a lot of time at the event? I feel like if you're both in Miami, you might be a little distracted and maybe miss some of the action.
Well, remember, J-Score, one of the great things about Live Golf is the shotgun start. This is a five-hour event. We're going to be in and out. We'll have plenty of time to paint the town red. We'll get to do the South Beach thing.
Love that for you, too.
Yeah, and starting at noon, very important for everyone's health and safety.
Cover all the golf.
Love all that.
Right, should we do ratings? We should do ratings. We'll do ratings. Are you guys ready?
Yep, so ready.
From Hollywood, the
ratings
capital of the world, in color, it's the
ratings
game. And here's the star of our show, your host,
Desert Duffer. Welcome back, folks, to the ratings game. This week, very exciting ratings game in our second episode. We have Prince Cup ratings. Everybody loves the President's Cup. Nobody cares about the President's Cup. Some people cared. I'll tell you how many people cared. President's Cup final day on Sunday. Remember, the U.S. team beat the depleted international team by a score of 17.5 to 12.5. The ratings for the final day from Quail Hollow on NBC, that's over the air, average viewership 1.894 million viewers. Not even 1.9 million viewers for the PGA Tour's flagship team event. So these were, before we get into it, these were just abominable ratings, like the worst in history on U.S. soil for the President's Cup. Compared to 2017 at Liberty National, which was the last time, that event drew an average of 1.97 million on Saturday and 2.26 million viewers on Sunday, which means this year's event saw a decrease of 30% and 16% respectively from that time. That time was the lowest in history. So that's where we are with the President's Cup. Fewer and fewer people caring. Thanks, Jay Monahan, for excluding Cam Smith and Louis Oosthuizen and Joaquin Niemann. I'm sure the viewers were really happy about that. So you know how the game works. I'm going to give you an event. You're going to tell me whether this event or show had ratings that were higher or lower than the President's Cup. 1.894 million viewers is what the President's Cup did on Sunday. J-Score, because you're younger and prettier, you're going to go second today. OTP Lefty, you get the first question. Are you ready?
I'm so ready.
Okay, the very first question on the ratings game. This is a Sunday program opposite the President's Cup on NBC. This program was on a cable network, USA Network. The program at 3:59 p.m. on Sunday, the NASCAR Cup Series race from Texas, higher or lower than the President's Cup on NBC?
Higher.
Any reason why you're coming to that conclusion? Usually we get a little bit more from you, OTP.
Okay, so it's coming down to the end of the season. Races actually matter. It's on in bars. People are interested in this.
Do you know anything about the Texas Motor Speedway?
Catchy name.
From what I've read on the internet, people, it's past its prime. You are correct, though, OTP Lefty. Whoa. Higher is correct. The NASCAR Cup Series race from Texas attracted an average viewership of 1.908 million viewers, just edging
in
out
a squeaker.
The President's Cup. OTP Lefty, you lead 1-0. Okay, the pressure's on, J-Score. I mean, coming out of the box.
Yeah, quick point early.
Now, do you remember the Sunday ratings on the President's Cup NBC?
1.86 or something like that?
1.894.
894. Three decimal points. Okay.
Yeah, I know. We added an extra one there. We can do better than that. Your question, J-Score. Also on Sunday, the network, HBO Prime, the time, 9:01 p.m. The show, House of the Dragon, higher or lower than the President's Cup?
Gosh, I mean, Game of Thrones stuff is appointment viewing for many, many folks out there. I think I got to go higher.
Well, J-Score, it is Sunday. And remember, HBO Prime, it doesn't have the reach that NBC does. NBC is in every house. You sure you want to go higher for House of Dragon?
I feel like Game of Thrones in general has got a little bit more passionate of a following than golf does. Not that there's anything wrong with the following that golf has, but I think Game of Thrones people are maybe just slightly more dedicated.
I'm sorry. You're wrong.
No.
House of the Dragon did 1.859 million viewers, narrowly losing out to the final day of the President's Cup, where the U.S. beat the Internationals 17.5 to 12.5. OTP Lefty, you lead 1-0.
We're back.
We didn't mention who wins this game. We were going to go to two, but since J Score went down early, we're going to make it three. First to three wins. Sorry, OTP. Oh. Those are the rules. I'm the host.
In comes the Russian judge.
Our next show on the TLC network, also Sunday night, 10:01 p.m. The program, Sister Wives. Sister Wives on TLC, 10:01 p.m.
Clarification?
Yes.
Is it a rerun?
I do not have that information.
Well, what kind of quiz show is this?
Is there a different? Is there a material difference? Well,
I know that it's not a rerun. These are all original programs. I'm gonna go ahead and say no. This is original. This is first run. Sister Wives.
J-Score, no offense, but there's a big difference between episode 4 out of a marathon of 10 that they're running all damn night versus one that's coming up Sunday on a very special Sister Wives.
That's fair.
See what I'm saying? There's some implications.
Yeah, I mean, I hope I'm telling the truth. I'm definitely going to have to confirm this after
100% higher.
I'm sorry. Sister Wives on TLC only attracted 1.319 million viewers. That's lower than the President's Cup on NBC. We remain 1-0 OTP Lefty.
We might have another
J-Score.
Another tickle fight here.
The question is yours. We're sticking with Sunday.
Okay.
Sunday night, ESPN. I can tell you, OTP, this is not a rerun. This is original programming. ESPN, 7:00 p.m. Sunday night baseball. MLB, Sunday night baseball. The Boston Red Sox versus the New York Yankees. Higher or lower than President's Cup golf. Only happens every 2 years. Biennial.
Those are big team names in baseball.
Some would say the biggest if you're from the right part of the country.
As a Minnesota Twins fan, I can't say that I'm fond of either one of those teams, so I can assure you I was not tuning in and wasn't even aware of it happening.
Do the Twins have a rival?
Who are the Twins' rival? I don't really want to talk about it. I mean, technically it'd be probably mostly the White Sox, a little bit of the Brewers from an ALNL thing, but anyway.
That's not real. Higher or lower, Red Sox Yankees, 7:00 Sunday night.
I'm going to go lower.
By the way, I'm sorry, J Score. 1.96 million for Red Sox Yankees on Sunday Night Baseball. I think what was interesting about this, what strikes me, is that the time, according to Nielsen, was 138 minutes for that program. That's not bad. We're doing a good job keeping those game times down, and it'll be good to see it. Okay, OTP, back to you. We're at 1-0. I didn't prepare that many. Let's hope we get through. The next program on Fox, we're moving to Saturday. The program, 4:06 p.m., college football, Pac-12 evening game. The University of Oregon at Washington State University, Fox, 4:06 p.m., higher or lower than the President's Cup of golf?
Lower. If it was SEC, I'd feel differently. You're already 0-1.
I'm sorry.
Oh, my gosh.
Oregon, Washington State drew 2,270,000, comfortably beating the President's
Cup.
God, we're still at 1-0. Moving on to J Score. We're back to Sunday.
Excuse me, quickly, before the question comes, will there be food provided?
We're back to Sunday.
Sunday, okay.
The network is TLC. I think that's the Learning Channel. It used to be called the Learning Channel. It might just be TLC now. They may have dropped that, like KFC.
Like Federal Express.
So the program is 90 Day Fiancé, Happily Ever After.
Oh.
8 p.m. on TLC, higher or lower than the President's Cup on NBC.
Sunday night, TLC. 90 Day Fiancé. I've heard of that show before, which says something, I think. But, I can't believe I'm going to get three wrong in a row. I'm going to go lower.
I'm so happy.
Yes, we did it.
That's correct. 90 Day Fiancé did only 1.415 million on TLC. That's lower than the President's Cup. Congratulations. We're tied 1-1. Now that we're 1-1, we're going to move the winning score back to 2. First player to reach 2 answers correctly will be our champion of the week. Remember, J-Score, you're ahead in the season standings 1-0. OTP Lefty, we're going back to college football. Thursday night college football on ESPN. The teams, West Virginia against Virginia Tech. The time, 7:29 p.m. WVU or VT, OTP Lefty, higher or lower?
This is a tough spot. This is a tough spot to be in. The Sunday night or the Thursday night NFL game came on 45 minutes later. What time period are we getting the ratings from? What window of the broadcast? Some kind of average over the broadcast time? Jesse, you noticed that as we're playing the game more, I'm starting to learn about the subtleties and starting to ask questions.
I can give you the answer to one of those things. It's average viewership. It's average viewership over, and I can tell you. Well, no, I can't tell you this time. Oftentimes, I can tell you how many minutes the program was, but this is average viewership for the game.
If you'd let the number slip, I could get the right answer. So I'm going to say lower, Duff.
We have a new winner, folks. Hey. We have a new winner. Congratulations, OTP Lefty. West Virginia, Virginia Tech attracted only 1.596 million average viewers. That's lower than the 1.894 million viewers that the President's Cup averaged on NBC. Congratulations to OTP. Good luck next time around, J-Score. It was a tough one. We should mention that the Saturday ratings, I think I might have briefly mentioned this earlier, Saturday ratings for the President's Cup were only 1.387 million. Mm. Very low, very low. That is the ratings game, the ratings game. We're all tied up, folks. 1-1.
On behalf of my team and everyone behind me, thank you so much. I lobbied the press for Jesse to get an opportunity to match because I was able to win 2-1 by going first and then leading off round 11.
And having the host suddenly make the game sudden death.
So, hey, sometimes you're the windshield, sometimes you're the bug, Jesse. Hate it for you.
I couldn't. Next time. Tip of the hat your way, OTP. I couldn't have gone to a better guy this week. Congratulations.
All right. We have anything else? We mentioned briefly that there's a PGA tournament happening. It's the Sanderson Farms. I don't know if there are any professional golfers playing this week. I don't know who's in that.
I haven't looked at the field, I got to be honest.
But I am excited about what's happening with the LPGA. The LPGA is in Texas, outside of Dallas, in The Colony, which is the name of the town. And it's at the club is called the Old American Golf Club. Jin Young Ko won this event last year. The event is called the Ascendant LPGA for the Volunteers of America Classic. Last year, it was just the Volunteers of America Classic. The LPGA didn't, and they do this often, they didn't announce the new joint title sponsor until like 3 weeks ago. It's the Ascendant now. The Ascendant, Jin Young Ko won last year. She's out until late October, at least, with an injured wrist. It's kind of a bummer for Jin Young Ko, especially since she won last year, but also she owns a home in Frisco, which is nearby. She loves the area. But she's out. She won't play. She's going to come back, hopefully, in Korea. I think that's the last week of October. But 7 of the top 10 in the LPGA season-long points list, the Race to the CME Globe, are there. They played today. It was windy in the morning. Seemed like it calmed down in the afternoon. OTP and Lefty and I are rooting hard for Celine Boutier, who is a member at the club there. And this is purely out of, love for the game that we're rooting for Celine this week.
Absolutely. We love it. We love and respect the game. And we wish Miss Boutier all the best in her pursuit of a home field victory.
All right, you guys got anything else? We're at 1 hour and 10 minutes before I edit this down to probably 45 minutes tomorrow.
Or 15. Duff, I'm good. Have a great weekend, guys.
Looking forward to a nice little partially long weekend and some golf, and appreciate chatting with you boys as always.
Enjoy your weekend. Old course, I'll try to watch a little old course. I love watching that course on TV, but you know, not too much golf. I'm going to try and get out to there's this club called the Valley Club of Montecito that's supposed to be pretty good. I might try to get out there this weekend. See care. You guys.
Go, Rory.